ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्वुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 10 Chapter 23, entitled Draupadi Meets the Queens of Krishna. Text number 22.
Adaya Vyasrajan Kechet Sajyam Kartum Anishvara Akoshtam Jam Samutkrishya पेतुर एके मुनाहता। आदाय व्यसृजन केचित् सज्यं कर्तुम् अनीश्वरा आकोष्टं ज्यां समुत्कृष्य पेतुर एके अमुनाहता। आदाय व्यसृजन केचित् सज्यं कर्तुम् अनीश्वरा आकोष्टं ज्यां समुत्कृष्य पेतुर् एके मुनाहता। आदाय व्यसृजन केचित् माताजी व्यसृजन केचित्
वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। आदाय after picking up, Vyasrajan, let go, Kechit, some of them, Sajyam, strung, Kartum, to make it, Anishwara, unable, Akoshtam, up to the tip of the bow. Jam, the bowstring. Samatkrishya, having pulled. Petuhu, fell down. Yeke, some. Amuna, by it. Hata, hit. Translation. Some of them picked up the bow but could not string it, and so they threw it aside in frustration. Some managed to pull the bowstring toward the tip of the bow, only to have the bow spring back and knock them to the ground. Next verse.
Sajyam kritva pare vira magadambashta chedipa bhimo duryodhana karno navidam stad avastitim.
A few heroes, namely Jarasandha, Shishupal, Bhima, Duryodhan, Karna and the king of Ambashta, succeeded in stringing the bow, but none of them could find the target. Purport. These kings were very strong physically, but they were not skillful enough to find the target.
Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadatisva Padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raguna Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamcha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo 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 Hare Hare.
So we are reading this chapter of Draupadi meeting the queens of Krishna. So these three chapters, chapter 82, 83 and 84. So in these three chapters, this is chapter, the events are taking place in Kurukshetra. In the previous chapter, Krishna's meeting with the different inhabitants of Vrindavan, that has been described. In this particular chapter, Draupadi conversing with the queens of Krishna, that is being described here. Essentially, this chapter, Draupadi asked the different queens that how did they get married to Krishna? And all these queens, they tell their stories of how they actually got married to Krishna. In one sense, we can say they are narrating the stories of how they came into Krishna consciousness. Because they were actually Krishna conscious even before their marriage. They were always actually because of hearing about Krishna, they wanted to get, they wanted to have Krishna as their husband. But how they actually established the relationship with Krishna, how they got married to Krishna, how they met Krishna, so that they are narrating here. So each of these queens, the eight principal queens, they tell their stories, and then the queen who is representing the 16,100 women who are actually held captive by Bhaumasur. So these nine queens, they are telling their stories. So we are actually currently reading the story of Lakshmana, not Lakshman, Lakshmana. Lakshmana, it refers to a female. So Lakshmana, she is telling her story of how she got married to Krishna. Then after this, the queen who will be representing the 16,100 queens, she will be telling her story. And Lakshmana, she is telling that how her father had, because she had heard about Krishna's qualities from Narada Muni. By that she had developed a great attraction to Krishna. She wanted to marry Krishna. And many kings, understanding the beauty of Lakshmana, they wanted to marry her. But her father wanted to give Lakshmana in marriage only to Krishna. So therefore, he had kept a very difficult task. Unless a person performs that task, then one will not be able to marry Lakshmana. So Lakshmana is actually narrating that, how her father actually had kept there is a particular target which is completely covered, and one has to hit that target by seeing the reflection. So in this particular case, it's similar to like how Draupadi got married to Arjuna. Drupada also had made a similar competition, similar task for marrying Draupadi. But here in this case, the task is much more difficult, because in the case of Draupadi, the target was partially visible, and one could actually, by seeing the reflection in the target, maybe one can hit that target. But in this particular case, in this competition, the acharyas explained, or maybe in one of the verses only it is explained, that the target is completely covered, and one has to simultaneously look up and also simultaneously look down and then hit the target. I don't know how it is possible. Because such a difficult task, only the Supreme Lord could actually do it. So Lakshmana is actually narrating her. She is saying that how so many kings wanted to marry her, and they came to actually lift the bow. Many of them couldn't even lift the bow. And some of them were able to actually lift the bow, but they were not able to string the bow. And when they were trying to string the bow, they were actually knocked down to the ground. And some of them were able to string the bow, but then they were not able to hit the target. Even Arjuna also came. Even Arjuna, when he actually tried to hit, it only grazed through the target. Arjuna also could not succeed. Only Krishna could succeed. But the main thing which I want to focus here is that, in this chapter, all these queens, they tell their story of how they got married to Krishna. And then, at the end, they actually express their prayer. They express their desire. And one common thing which we find in all of the desires is that, may the Supreme Lord Krishna accept us as His maid servants. We always pray that we just want to be a maid servant in the house of Lord Krishna. So that is one common theme which is there in all the prayer. And only the last queen who is representing the 16,100 queens, they offer prayer. Rohini Devi, she is offering prayer to get the similar kind of love like the gopis of Vrindavan. But apart from that, all the other eight principal queens, they are actually deeply rooted in their servitude to Krishna, and they just want to be a maid servant of Krishna. So usually, in this world, when when there is a relationship between two persons, maybe between a husband and wife or between a master and a servant. So initially the relationship is, it is exciting, but after some time, once a person comes to know about the weaknesses of the other persons, that initial mood of servitude or the that intimacy or that reverence, that actually goes down. But on the other hand, here we see that these queens of Krishna, they actually just want to be, like, in fact, some of them, Krishna had grandsons also at this time, because Krishna's grandson Aniruddha remained at Dwaraka in order to protect Dwaraka. So even, but still they were in the mood of servitude to Krishna. In fact, in the first canto, there's a verse which comes that, Nityam nirikshamananam yadapi dwarakau kasam. Na vitrupyanti hidrishu shriyo dhammang manchutam. I think there's another verse which comes. Especially it says that, although the queens of Krishna, although they were accustomed to stay in the company of Krishna, they had all the time association of Krishna, but they found Krishna's lotus feet to be newer and newer. They were always actually excited to have the association of Krishna. And which is the contrast, which is the difference between a material relationship and the relationship with Krishna, that even after spending a prolonged time with Krishna, they actually want to be a servant of Krishna. So what makes them feel like that? It is because they are tasting bhakti rasa. So they are tasting bhakti rasa, the mellow of devotional service with Krishna, and because of that they are finding it newer and newer. So today we will want to discuss about this topic of rasa, which we earlier discussed in like some other group of devotees. But so we want to discuss this concept of material rasa and bhakti rasa based on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, because in the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Prabhupada explains about the difference between material rasa and bhakti rasa. In the case of material rasa, the characteristics of material rasa are bogatyaga and chapala sukha. That means a person oscillates between renunciation and enjoyment. Boga and tyaga. Somebody is working hard throughout the week. That means there is a detachment, there is an austerity involved. He's taking so much of inconvenience. And then in the weekend he wants to go to some hill station, or he wants to go to a hotel or some parties, want to enjoy there. And again there is a whole week of actually austerities. So a person is oscillating between boga and tyaga. So that is the characteristics of material rasa. And another characteristic of material rasa is chapala sukha. That means that material rasa produces pleasure which is flickering in nature, which is temporary in nature. Yehi samsparshaja boga dukkha yone yevate adyanta vanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. So Krishna says that the happiness which is obtained by the contact of the senses with the sense objects has a beginning and end. And intelligent people do not go after that happiness. So dukkha yone yevate, that means every material happiness acts like a womb which will give birth to suffering. Like, for example, when a man and woman unite, so when the child is conceived, initially the child is invisible in nature. But in due course of time, the child will take birth. So similarly, in the case of material sense gratification, initially, the suffering which will come in the future, that is invisible.
Yes, but just because it is invisible, it does not mean that it is non-existent. In due course of time, that suffering will come, will take birth. Like in the case of, again, the same example, like in the case of when the child is conceived, so through some mechanical ways, through some surgery, one may be able to abort that baby. Because it's a very great sinful activity, but one may be able to abort that baby. But in the case of material sense gratification, there is no technique by which one can abort that suffering which will take birth in the future. So therefore, the material rasa has got these two characteristics, bhoga tyaga and chapala sukha. On the other hand, spiritual rasa, what is the nature of spiritual rasa or bhakti rasa? So we'll try to discuss that. In fact, just before we discuss that bhakti rasa, let us try to understand what is the definition of the word rasa. The word rasa, like many times, there is no exact English equivalent for the word rasa. And Prabhupada explains in Nectar of Devotion, there is no English equivalent, but our spiritual master Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has translated the word rasa as mellow. So therefore, we will follow in his footsteps and we will translate as mellow. He says that, and then he explains that mellow means what? Mellow means the pleasure, the juicy, he says that mellow refers to the relishably sweet taste of a fruit. When there is a fruit, and then when you are eating the fruit, and you get the juice from the fruit, the taste which is derived from that juice of that fruit, that is called as rasa or mellow. So in the case of the, when we talk about bhakti rasa, when we talk about, like, in the case of a fruit, we are relishing that juice, that is a mellow, but here rasa, it means that we are relishing the pleasure, the juicy fruit of pleasure from the relationships. So relationship is compared to a fruit, and from the fruit we actually relish that, we relish the taste of the juice. So similarly, in a relationship, the pleasure experienced in a relationship, that is called as rasa. In the case of a mundane rasa, the pleasure we relish is actually from the relationship. In the case of mundane rasa, the relationship is with some, maybe another living entity or some, any material object or some other living entity, and we try to enjoy sense gratification. But in the case of bhakti rasa, the relationship is with Krishna. So the pleasure experienced in the relationship with Krishna, that taste of that juice, that is called as rasa. And like to give another more technical explanation or a shastric explanation, Rupa Goswami, he has composed a verse, Vyatitya Bhavana Vartma. Vyatitya Bhavana Vartma, that means that which becomes, that which is beyond imagination. Yes, chamatkara bharabhu. Bhara means heavy, chamatkara means wonder, that which is heavy with wonder. Hridi sattvo jvale badam. That which is relished within the heart, hridi, shining with goodness, shining with shuddha sattva. Sattvojvale, that is called as rasa. The 3 points, that which is beyond imagination, heavy with wonder, that which is released within the heart, shining with shuddha sattva, is known as rasa. So these are some technical definition of rasa. And Saraswati Thakur, he also quotes a Vedic statement, Shruti statement, raso rasam evayam, raso vai saha, rasam evayam labdvanandi bhavati. So raso vai saha, that means the Supreme Lord himself is called as rasa. raso vai saha. He himself is called as rasa. And then what is the effect of relishing that rasa with Krishna? So rasa can be called as a pleasure which is experienced in relationship with Krishna. But Krishna himself is also called as rasa because he is the source of all the rasas. And rasam yevayam labdvanandi bhavati. That means that the taste or mellow, when a person achieves that rasa, rasam yevayam labdvanandi, when a person achieves that rasa, a person becomes filled with bliss. Labdva anandi bhavati, a person becomes filled with bliss. So, these are some definitions of rasa. So, when we talk about bhakti rasa, just exactly in contrast to the material rasa, the pleasure derived from bhakti rasa is actually eternal. And in bhakti rasa, because a person is situated in one's constitutional position, a person does not oscillate between bhoga and tyaga. And there are some verses which you will consider from the Bhagavatam to actually describe this bhakti rasa. Right in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, this verse comes. Vayam tuna vitrupyama uttama shloka vikrame yashinvatam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. The sages of Naimisharanya, they say that we are never tired of hearing the topics of Krishna. We are never satiated. In fact, we are actually finding this to be newer and newer at every step. So, Vishnu Chakravartipada explains that when a person is eating something, when does a person become satisfied? A person will become satisfied when in three conditions. When a person has eaten sufficiently, full stomach, so then a person is satisfied. Or when a person is, and also when a person is aware of the taste of what he is eating. Suppose a person might have eaten sufficiently, full stomach, but he did not perceive any taste in the foodstuff he ate. Then there is no satisfaction of eating. Either big, or the third condition is that a person has not relished eating. That means, suppose a person has eaten to the full stomach and he is also aware of the taste. Taste buds are proper, the foodstuff is proper, but he did not relish eating. That means like in a hurry burry, like he just put some 4 or 5 different items, vada or son papadi or something like that. I remember in the hostels, like sometimes students would get up just before 8:30 the college, they would get up at 8:10, some would brush their teeth and then they would take some sandwich and then while going in the cycle, they would actually keep eating and also going. So in a hurry burry they eat. So then there is no actually satisfaction of relishing them. So, but in the case of the sages of Naimisharanya, they are hearing Krishna Katha continuously. And they are rasagya, they are aware of the taste. And they are relishing the subject matter. All three conditions are there, but still they are not satisfied. So what is the reason? Although they are hearing regularly, they are actually aware of the taste, but still they are not satisfied, because the reason is that the nature of spiritual rasa is that it actually, that although you may be tasting, you are aware of the taste, but the taste increases, it becomes newer and newer at every moment. Because the taste increases newer and newer at every moment, so therefore they are not able to, although they are rasagya, but still they are not feeling satiated. They want to hear more and more. And why is it? What is that quality of this Krishna Katha which makes the taste actually, which makes the taste appear newer and newer? That is because of Krishna. So Shukadeva Goswami tells Parishit Maharaj in the beginning of Brahma Vimohan Leela. Satam ayam sara brutani sargo yad artavani shuti cheta samapi pratikshanam navyavadachyutasya yat shriyo vitanam iva sadhu varta. So he says that, he tells Parishit Maharaj that you are actually tasting Krishna Katha to be newer and newer at every moment. Huh. Devotees who have accepted the essence of life are attached to Krishna in the core of their hearts, and it is their nature to talk only of Krishna at every moment as if the topics are newer and newer. And you are finding Krishna Katha to be newer and newer, and devotees are, and they find the Krishna Katha to be newer and newer, just like the materialistic people are attached to the topics of women and sex. So, Sukadeva Goswami gives a partial analogy. This analogy does not completely represent. He just gives a partial analogy, just like the materialistic people, they find the topics of women and sex to be newer and newer. Similarly, the devotees find the topics of Krishna Katha to be newer and newer. Why is it that? Because Krishna is called as Achyuta. Pratikshanam navyavat achyutasya. Here the meaning of the word achyuta means Krishna is achyuta because he never deviates from rasa. There are different meanings of the word achyuta which comes in different places. One meaning of the word achyuta means one who never fails in his affection for the devotees. Another meaning of the word achyuta means one who never fails to forgive his devotees. And another meaning of the word achyuta is that one who never fails to protect the vows of his devotees. The 18th chapter of the Gita. Another meaning of the word achyuta, which comes in the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna is called as achyuta because his devotees never fall down. But here the meaning of the word achyuta in the 10th canto is that one who never deviates from rasa, so therefore the bhakti rasa, it appears newer and newer. And another place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this word talks about rasa. Arasagya kaka chushe jnana nimba phale rasagya kokila kaya premamra mukule. So Kaviraj Goswami is saying that Ramanandara is saying the rasa, the material rasa, those who are devoid of all transcendental mellows are like the crows that suck the juice from the bitter fruits of the nimba tree of knowledge, whereas those who enjoy the mellows are like the cuckoos who eat the buds of mango tree of love of Godhead. So here's a comparison between material rasa is like a juice from a nimba tree, and bhakti rasa is like the juice from a mango fruits or mango buds. But anyway, this topic actually is little esoteric, but well, we will try to understand. But I'll try to present some reasons for why you want to discuss this topic of bhakti rasa. So there are some quotes which I'll mention from the Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So Sarasvati Thakur mentions, so actually we have to understand this bhakti rasa is a unique contribution of Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. One of the unique contribution of Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is that you will not find in any other Vaishnava Sampradayas such a detailed analysis of bhakti rasa. You will never find in other sampradayas. And especially this analysis of bhakti rasa is given by Srila Rupa Goswami. And because we are Rupanugas, we are supposed to be followers of Rupa Goswami, we should know actually his contribution of Rupa Goswami. Where Prabhupada mentions quite a few places in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when he mentions the books written by Rupa Goswami, he gives the list of books, and then he mentions that the most celebrated book given by Rupa Goswami is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So just like for example, somebody is Say somebody wants to buy a house in Bombay. So usually to buy a house in Bombay is the housing rate is quite costly, and then unless somebody, his father or grandfather has a house, and then usually it's very difficult to buy a house in Bombay. And somebody is struggling to buy a house with different EMIs and loan. And one fine day he comes to know that his grandfather has left a great treasure for him. Then that will become that information will come as a great source of relief for him. When he comes to know about the treasure left by the grandfather, so only thing is he has to satisfy, he has to prove himself, he has to follow a certain process and guideline, and then by which he can claim that property. So similarly, when devotees, when we are actually struggling with the different anarthas and sadhana bhakti, and we are struggling with the different conditioned soul is struggling with enjoyment of material treasure. But when we come to know about the treasure left by our spiritual forefathers in the form of this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which gives information about what is in store when we actually achieve Bhakti Rasa, this information will come as a great source of relief. This information will give us an impetus, it will give a meaning to our struggle in the practice of sadhana bhakti. Because when we come to know, this treasure is available, so then our struggle with the sadhana bhakti will become meaningful, we can actually perform sadhana bhakti with great enthusiasm. So therefore, although this topic is esoteric, but we should know, we should have information of this bhakti rasa. What is this bhakti rasa? What is the experience which comes as a result of tasting bhakti rasa? So therefore, I always mention there are three things required in a spiritual life. One is, what is the goal? And another is that, what is our present position? And what is the path to achieve that goal? So one should know the goal, and then we should also know where we stand. In order to know where we stand, one needs to have a honest introspection. If we imagine ourselves to be already in advanced stage, then we may take up a wrong path, or we may think that I am already in a Raganuga stage, something like that, we may imagine like that. So we have to know what is our level, and what is the goal, and what is the path to achieve that goal. So in talking about the goal, as I mentioned, that we have to actually taste Bhakti Rasa. So Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur mentions two reasons why we should know, although these topics are esoteric, why we should have information about this. He says that when our men, that means when the devotees, when our men decide to become Sahajiyas, they can do a great disaster. They can do a lot of disaster because they are in the know. They are in the know. That means they are familiar with the subject matter. So our devotees should know the inner architecture of rasa. And for that sake, one should read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 108 times. Because these things will keep us away from Sahajiyas. Away from becoming Sahajiyas. So the first reason given by Saraswati Thakur is that we have to know the inner architecture of rasa in order to not become Sahajiyas. And another reason Saraswati Thakur mentions is that he says that one place when he was taking on a Brajamandal Parikrama, he talks about the Leela Kirtan, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So the same principle can be taken. So Saraswati Thakur mentions, he says that although most of you are not qualified to hear these pastimes of Radha and Krishna, but I want to actually make you aware that such a transcendental goal also exists. If you are not aware of such a transcendental goal, if you are not aware that the transcendental goal as artha pravritti, then we may think that anartha nivritti is the goal of life. He mentions that, lest anyone make the mistake of thinking that anartha nivritti is the only goal, and it is not necessary to enter into artha pravritti, so therefore, I have started this Ashtakaliya Leela Kirtan performance has started. So the principle, what he is saying is that in order to make you aware that such a goal exists, therefore I am actually describing these pastimes. And I know that all of you are not ready for this, but I want you to know that such a goal exists. Otherwise, if a person thinks that anartha nivritti is the goal, then all our efforts may become transformed into impersonalism. If we do not know artha pravritti as the goal, if we do not know tasting bhakti rasa is the goal, then all our efforts can become transformed into impersonalism. Just to give a simple example, there is a mango tree on the bank of a river. So there is a reflection of a mango tree in the river. And if a person dives into the river to get that mango within the river, he will never get the mango, how much ever deep he may dive into the river. So one has to know that there is no mango in the river, but one should also know that, there is a real mango in the tree. So, impersonalists or the jnanis, they only understand that there is no mango in the river. But they feel that their conviction is that there is nothing called as mango also. In the case of the karmis, they understand that there is mango in the river, they are diving into the river to get the mango. But the impersonalists, they know that there is no mango in the river, but they feel that there is no mango at all. So when a person understands there is no mango in the river, but if he thinks that there is nothing called as mango, but the nature of a living entity is that it wants mango, it wants pleasure. So therefore, after some time, you will again dive into the river to get the mango. So therefore, you have to know that where is the real mango. So therefore, we have to be aware of what is this bhakti rasa, not just know that material rasa is bhogat yagan chapala sukha. So with this, I will just discuss what is this component of bhakti rasa. So Rupa Goswami describes there are five components of bhakti rasa. Bhakti rasa is a combination of five things: vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, vyabhichari bhava and sthayi bhava. To give a simple example, suppose halwa. So halwa is a combination of different ingredients: rava, ghee, dry fruits, sugar, maybe some kesar, something like that. So the different analogies, when you give different analogies actually illustrate certain point. So with this analogy, what I want to make the point is that, so in the halwa, the main ingredient, the main base is the rava. So similarly, rasa is a combination of five ingredients, but the main ingredient in rasa is what is called as thayi bhava, one's eternal affection with Krishna. That is called as thayi bhava. Another analogy. So then sthayi bhava is the eternal affection with Krishna, and when vibhava is that which stimulates one's affection with Krishna. When the eternal affection with Krishna is stimulated by some stimulant, then the consequent action which results from the heightened affection towards Krishna is called as anubhava. Anu means that which follows after vibhava. To illustrate this point, there is another example. Just like, for example, we went to like Pejavar Swami's Pariyaya. So they had made a huge fireworks. So there was a big box was kept. So normally that box appeared like a common box. Maybe something is there. And then they came and actually, two people came and actually lighted the two end of the box. And then we came to know that for the next 25 minutes there was like huge fireworks in the sky. So that box is actually loaded with different firecrackers, and that spark of fire acted like a stimulant. So the box is loaded with the firecrackers. Similarly, a devotee is having that eternal affection with Krishna, that is called as Thayi Bhava. When he comes in contact with the stimulant, when that box came in contact with the fire spark, then the consequent fire display, that is called as Anubhava. And the next ingredient of rasa is called as Sattvika Bhava. So Anubhava and Sattvika Bhava, they are actually similar. Sattvika Bhava, the definition of Sattvika Bhava is also, it's called Sattvika Bhava is the reaction that results from heightened affection towards Krishna. And Anubhava is also the same. The reaction which results from the heightened affection with Krishna. But the difference between Anubhava and Sattvika Bhava is that in the case of Anubhava, there is a conscious premeditated decision as to how to suitably express that affection with Krishna. But in the case of Sattvika Bhava, there is an unpremeditated involuntary expression arising because of the heightened affection with Krishna. That is the difference between Anubhava and Sattvika Bhava. And this is what I am giving is just a drop of the drop from the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. And Rupa Goswami has given a multiple subcategories of each of this. Like for example, he says like Vibhava, that which stimulates one's affection, he classifies into two categories. Krishna or Krishna's devotees can stimulate one's affection with Krishna. That is called as Alambana. Or some objects related with Krishna or Krishna's devotees can stimulate one's affection with Krishna. That is called as Uddipana. And in the case of Alambana, he classifies, if Krishna stimulates one's affection, that is called as Vishaya Alambana. If the devotee stimulates one's affection towards affection, that is called as Ashraya Alambana. And then Vishaya Alambana, he gives in multiple categories. In that he puts the 64 qualities of Krishna, the forms of Krishna, and so many subcategories. And in Ashraya Alambana, devotees of Krishna, he gives multiple subcategories. And then in Uddipana, he gives more categories. And in the case of, say, Anubhava, Anubhava is the, like, another example is that when a mother has an eternal affection, mother has an affection towards the child. And mother sees some bag of the child, which the child is using. By seeing that bag, her affection towards the child gets awakened. So that bag acts like a stimulant, Vibhava, and her consequent action, maybe she starts crying. So that is called as Anubhava. So Rupa Goswami, when he describes about Anubhava, he says like Anubhava, there are seven types of Anubhava. For example, he says that dancing, rolling on the ground, singing loudly, stretching the body, and he classifies the seven types of Anubhava within two subcategories, Sita and Kshepana. That which involves lot of bodily movements, that which does not involve strong bodily movements. Like for example, when Lord Shiva saw the Ras Leela, he started dancing in ecstasy. It's like an example of that Kshepana, that which involves lot of strong bodily movement. Once Narada Muni was chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, it appeared as if like Narasingadev had appeared. All the demons began to flee in different directions. This is an example of Sita. Another time, Narada Muni, like when he remembered Krishna in great ecstasy, he began to stretch his body so vigorously that his sacred thread gave way for it. This is an example of Kshepana. So like that, he gives different subcategories. And the case of Sattvika Bhava, again he talks about 8 kinds of Sattvika Bhava. Shedding tears, like faltering of the voice, changing of the bodily color, like that. And within Sattvika Bhava, he analyzes that these Sattvika Bhavas can be classified into 3 criteria. Like they can be exhibited in different intensity. They can be exhibited in different intensities, and how do we, the intensities of the Sattvika Bhava can be actually, is determined by 3 criteria. That means, what is the duration of the Sattvika, what is the duration of the ecstatic symptoms, whether the ecstatic symptom is localized or all pervading throughout the body, and about the intensity of the ecstatic symptoms, whether it is slightly or profoundly. And based on that, he gives 4 degrees of intensity, called as Daumayita, Jvalita, Deepta, and Uddeepta. So he gives definition for all these things. But my main aim is that just to make you aware of what Rupa Goswami has given, and to give some inspiration to actually to read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, because to describe all these things it will take a lot of time. So then, another, the fourth, so we discussed the 4 ingredients of Bhakti Rasa: Sattvika, Sthayi Bhava, Vibhava, Anubhava, and Sattvika Bhava. And another ingredient is called as Vyabhichari Bhava. It is also called as Sanchari Bhava. So Vyabhichari Bhava means, Vyabhichari Bhava, he explains that it is an emotional experience that results from intensified affection for Krishna. It is an emotional experience. Like for example, when a mother is actually seeing the child about to fall down from a staircase. So there is an emotion of intense anxiety which the mother goes through. So that emotional experience is called as a Vyabhichari Bhava. So that emotional experience that heightens one's affection further, which serves to further embellish and further simulate that affection. To give a material example, like suppose we have nimbu juice, but in that we add jaljeera masala. It further enhances. There is some heart or some there is some heart this thing also. So that is like Vyabhichari Bhava. Like Mother Yashoda, when she saw that Krishna is under the coils of Kaliya, she went through an intense emotion. So Rupa Goswami describes 33 types of Vyabhichari Bhava. And then like he gives some more 7 categories and different intensities. And in Sattvika Bhava also, Rupa Goswami discusses, there are 4 types of Sattvika Abhasa. That which is semblance of real ecstasy, because sometimes people can imitate real ecstasy, so therefore he gives a semblance of real ecstasy. That is a little interesting, so I'll just mention that. Like for example, he talks about Rati Abhasa. The first type of Sattvika Abhasa is Rati Abhasa. That is, Rati Abhasa is that sometimes a person exhibits ecstatic symptoms. Sometimes people say that, I attended that kirtan, I went into ecstasy that. So actually, Rati Abhasa is the some ecstatic symptoms which a person feels because of proximity to some very highly exalted devotee. So that is called as Rati Abhasa. And Sattvika Abhasa. Sattvika Abhasa is that sometimes a person may not be in the proximity of an exalted devotee, but still he exhibits some ecstatic symptoms. What is that due to? It is because of a soft-hearted emotional disposition. Means by his nature, he actually, for anything, he starts crying. So some pastime is going on and then he suddenly starts crying. And then he will go and watch a cricket match and India loses the match, there also he will start crying. And he goes and watches a movie and then villain beats up a hero and then there also he starts crying. So it is because of soft-hearted emotional disposition, that is sattvika abhasa. And third type of this is like pratipa. Like pratipa means, sometimes a person is neither in a proximity of an advanced devotee, neither has a soft-hearted disposition, and in fact he is a logician, and a person may be an analytic philosopher or a logician, but he also sometimes exhibits ecstatic symptoms. What is that due to? So Rupa Goswami says that that pratipa is the sometimes even such barren people may sometimes be able to exhibit a semblance of ecstasy. It simply testifies to the overwhelming potency of Krishna Katha. Sometimes when a person is hearing Krishna Katha, a person does not have a soft-hearted disposition. He is not even hearing from a highly exalted devotee. But the potency of Krishna Katha is so exalted, it can make even a analytical logician who is little hard-hearted, even he can make even that person very soft-hearted, he may start even crying. So that is the pratipa. And the fourth type of sattvika abhasa is nissatva. And neither of the above three categories are there, but still sometimes a person exhibits ecstatic symptoms. He is neither in the proximity to a great devotee, nor does he have a soft-hearted disposition, not is he hearing some Krishna Katha, but he exhibits ecstatic symptoms. It is because of some previous, by practicing nicely. Because of, that's like a person practices for a drama practice. Similarly, a person practices ecstatic symptoms and then when he comes for the kirtan, he starts rolling, something like that. With some practice, he starts doing that. That's what the Sagajiya sometimes would do. So, in that way, Rupa Goswami also talks about what is the sattvika abhasa. So in this way, these are the five ingredients of rasa. So I will conclude with this point, with this verse from the first canto of the Bhagavatam. This is an important verse. Like when a person tastes rasa, what is the result of tasting bhakti rasa? Navai jano jatu katanchana vrajen Mukunda sev anyavat anga samsmritim smaran mukundangri upaguhanam punar vihatu michen na rasagraho jana. So Narada Muni says that when a person has tasted bhakti rasa, and if a person gives up the process of devotional service, and even though he gives up the process of devotional service, he will actually remember that embrace of the lotus feet of Krishna. And then he will again, remembering that embrace of lotus feet of Krishna, that means he will think that how I was experiencing so much of pleasure in the association of devotees. Now I have given up devotional service, now I am so miserable. In this way, analyzing the difference between his previous life in devotional service and how he is miserable in the not practicing devotional service, in this way, remembering the previous embrace of the lotus feet of the Lord, he again takes to devotional service. And when he again takes to devotional service, he never desires to give up the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. He never desires to give up the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. It is not mentioned that he does not think that I will never give up the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. He thinks that I will never desire to give the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Because he knows that ultimately I can only desire that I will never desire to give the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Because ultimately it is Krishna's desire whether I can continue to be in the path of devotional service. Sometimes Krishna may create an impediment. So therefore, because he is free from pride, he feels that after he again takes up to devotional service, he feels that I will never desire to give up the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord again. Why he desires like that? Because he has tasted bhakti rasa. The taste of bhakti rasa keeps haunting the devotee like a ghost, and because of that he cannot forget that taste of devotional service, he again comes back to devotional service. So a person may think that, so this refers to that devotee who has tasted bhakti rasa after coming to the level of sthayi bhava and then being coming in contact with the vibhava, anubhava. Then when such a devotee falls down, maybe he will think like that. Because in order to come to the stage of sthayi bhava, which is the most important ingredient in the bhakti rasa, one has to come beyond the stage of bhava. So one may think that this verse refers to a devotee who has gone beyond the stage of bhava, who has developed the sthayi bhava, his eternal affection towards Krishna, and then after tasting the bhakti rasa, when he has fallen down, and because of the taste of bhakti rasa, he keeps remembering the taste, and then he again comes back to devotional service. So this only refers to the fallen devotee who has fallen from a very high, advanced stage of devotional service. One may think like that. But Vishnu Chakravartakur says that actually the taste of bhakti rasa, although a person tastes bhakti rasa completely only when a person has developed his sthayi bhava, one's eternal affection towards Krishna, but the taste of bhakti rasa is present in a covered form even in the right in the first kirtan when a person participates. The taste of bhakti rasa is present in a covered form right in the first act of devotional service which a person performs. Just like when a person is eating some foodstuffs, the digestion becomes fully complete after 6 hours of actually eating the food. But as soon as the person starts eating the food, right at that time the process of digestion starts. So similarly, a person tastes bhakti rasa completely only when a person has developed his sthayi bhava. But the taste of bhakti rasa is present in a covered form right from the first act of devotional service. And because a person has tasted bhakti rasa, although it is in a covered form, that taste of bhakti rasa will keep haunting that person, and he will never be able to, he again has to come back to devotional service even if he leaves. So therefore, even if a beginner in the process of devotional service, if he falls down, because he has tasted bhakti rasa, that taste will haunt him and he will have to come back. That is why, as one devotee mentioned, that joining the Hare Krishna movement or taking to the path of devotional service is joining the mafia gang. Because once a person joins the mafia gang, and when a person leaves the mafia gang, the mafia gang will never leave him. They will keep actually following him and keep him pulling. So similarly, when a person has tasted bhakti rasa, and that bhakti rasa will keep haunting him, and that will actually pull the person back. So here, these queens of Dwaraka, because they have tasted bhakti rasa in relationship with Krishna, although they have spent so much of time with Krishna, they always say that, may we always be the maid servants of Krishna. In this way they always pray that. So I'll stop here. Grantharam Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.